Hey everybody. We're broadcasting live December 31st, 2015. And tonight we're going to do something special. We're going to meditate until midnight. So we'll start, say, around 10. But you can come and go, people can come and go. Just be sure to be on at midnight. No? So time it so that you're meditating until midnight. If you want to join us. Let's make sure this is working.
Which is 5 UTC time, right?
Could be.
Just for people that are not in Eastern time zone.
Right. New Year's is different. Drat and all. Yeah, if you're not in Eastern, kind of ruins it.
Well, we've had people posting Happy New Year already from Romania and...
Oh yeah, it's already New Year's there.
That's yeah, right. Simon in Europe, it's already the New Year. It's all good, though.
And another thing is, I'm signing up for TEDx Talk. This is their thing that they gave me. So I have to submit a short video talking about, and I just had it. Oh, it's gone now. What is your biggest and greatest idea for a topic? That's what my video has to be about. In 1 minute or less. So it's actually quite short. Simple. Should be fairly simple. Straightforward. But we can do that later. Or maybe now if there are no questions, right? Are there any questions?
There aren't any questions on the board, but I had a question if you had a moment. It's New Year's.
You happen to have moments.
Oh, okay. You know, it's New Year's and people always kind of make fun of New Year's resolutions since they get broken pretty quickly. But we have determinations in Buddhism. How is that different? Is a determination a good thing to try to do?
Yeah, if it's reasonable, there's the danger of making unreasonable determinations and kind of getting, feeling like you've you end up breaking them, right? Same goes with resolutions. They're great if you keep them. If you don't, well, and if they're unreasonable, then determination is. More like a resolve to achieve something rather than like if you make a resolution not to smoke or something like that. Determination isn't usually used like that. It's more like, may I quit smoking would be a good determination. But resolutions seem to be, I guess I don't know, they can be varied, but if a resolution is like, may I quit smoking, then I think that's in line with the determination idea.
So positive rather than negative.
Well, more like something to work for rather than something that can be broken. Determination. Is a little more like that. You can make determinations that are limited, but that are time limit, time sensitive. You can say within this week, within this year, before the end of the year, may I be able to quit smoking, for example. Within this hour, may I attain Nibbana, something like that. But that's problematic, can be problematic, because you start to get the feeling that it's that you must attain it, and like you're going to break it if you don't. So it's less about about promising. It's not really a promise. It's a intention or a focus, a direction, giving yourself direction and determination, becoming determined to do something.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, it's quite similar to New Year's resolutions. But I think a lot are yeah, I mean, some people make determinations to start something, right? To start exercising or to start meditating, for example. My New Year's resolution is to start to meditate. I think you have to be clever with determinations. It's also something that you build. So you want to use determinations that you have a reasonable chance of succeeding at, or that are reasonable for you to succeed. It shouldn't be an uncertainty there. So you and the harder ones you just build up to. Don't make a determination that that is unreasonable. Try to make use determination to push you to something that you wouldn't otherwise do or commit yourself to.
So maybe start small and then
Yeah.
build up.
Well, it depends on your level of determination, because determination is one of the 10 perfections. So, like the Buddha made a Bodhisattva made a resolution to not get up until he became enlightened, and that's a very until he become a fully enlightened Buddha, and that's a very powerful one. But he had perfected his determination, so he was very determined.
So that's probably not the one I'll start out with.
Yeah.
No, thank you, Bhante.
Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and see what happens when I try to make this video. Okay, so I don't know if I'm even ready for this. So I am applying. What do I give my name as? Student speaker applications. And I'm applying to give a talk. The TEDx McMaster University conference don't know how this is going to go. I think I'll talk it through first with you guys. Okay. So I'm applying to give a talk at the TEDx McMaster University conference. And I don't know what I'm going to say. What I'm interested in should I start there? Yeah. What I'm interested in is the application of ancient spiritual teachings in the modern digital age. My life has been a series of contrasts. I was born in a house in a 200-acre forest, but since I was 6 years old, I have... It's probably too much detail. I'm not going to fit it in a minute. I was born in a house in a 200-acre forest, but when I was 6 years old, my parents got us our first Apple IIe computer. I excelled in school, but I dropped out and went off to Asia to become a Buddhist monk. I've lived in a straw hut, and I've lived under a picnic table. I've lived in a straw hut in the rainforest and under a picnic table in North Hollywood. I've taught meditation to people from all around the world in the jungle and on mountains, and at the same time I have over 1,000 YouTube videos where I also teach. It's going to go over a minute, isn't it? Yeah, I can't go into all this detail. This is what the talk is going to be about, a little bit about myself, and then you know, using it as a basis, because their whole thing is about the paradox of change, the contrasts of change. But I think I'll have to get right into it, because under a minute, I think they just want us to blurt out, and they want to get a feel for our stage presence. Don't know if they're looking for a Buddhist monk. Okay, so let's back up. I'm applying, I won't even say that maybe. Hi, my name is Yuta Damo Bhikkhu, and what I'm interested to talk about is the idea of, or is the application of ancient spiritual teachings in the digital age. My life has been a series of contrasts. I'm a Buddhist monk, lived in the jungle for many years, but at the same time I teach meditation on the internet. So the idea of how these teachings apply or can be applied in the digital age is to me quite interesting. I mean, on the one hand, the internet and the surrounding technologies are all about pleasure and self and money and materialism. But on the other hand, they're about bringing people together, about sharing knowledge, and about caring for others. The whole like culture and share culture, as it can actually be seen as quite wholesome, brings people together, and can be, these sort of things can be applicable. So, how did I do? Was that a minute? Timing this.
Do you want me to time it?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, you're back.
I might as well just go ahead and start recording it. Okay, I'm gonna start recording and we'll see how it goes. Wait. Test. Yeah. Okay. Everything looks good. got to unmute you.
Yeah.
It was rushed, wasn't it?
But I mean, it sounded really good up until the last couple of seconds there.
How do you...
You looked like you didn't know what to say for the last couple of seconds.
But I know what I could have said if I'd had more time, but I'm watching 5, 4,
right.
3.
No. But you did really well with compacting the rest of it into 55 seconds. It's
right.
Just that 5 seconds.
So, where was I? Right, knowledge and enlightenment. Thank you for your consideration. That's a good ending, though. Okay. Hi, my name is Yutta Dhammo Bhikkhu, and what I'm interested to talk about is the application of ancient spiritual teachings in the modern digital age. So my life has been, I don't know if I even want to say that. I just want to jump into it. I guess I want to, because they're talking about the paradox. I want to tie it into their idea of contrasts. Hi, my name is Yutta Dhammo Bhikkhu, and what I'd like to talk about is the application of ancient spiritual teachings in a modern digital age. My life has been a series of contrasts. I'm a Buddhist monk. I've practiced and taught meditation in the jungles of Asia. But at the same time, I've started to use the internet and YouTube and technologies like that to spread and encourage meditation and wisdom. So what I'd like to look at is how the digital age can, on the one hand, inhibit our... In one hand, can hinder, obstruct. Hi, my time limit. No writing. Okay. Hi, my name is Yutta Dhammo Bhikkhu, and what I'd like to talk about is the application of ancient spiritual teachings in the modern digital age. My life has been a series of contrasts. I'm ordained as a Buddhist monk, and I've taught and practiced meditation and Buddhism in the jungles of Asia. But at the same time, I've begun to use these teachings on the internet and through technologies like YouTube and Facebook. So I'm interested to look at how these technologies can hinder and at the same time can help our spiritual practice. On the one hand, they encourage indulgence and intoxication, but on the other hand, they can foster love and compassion and wisdom. So thank you for your consideration. I hope you find this interesting. Still didn't know how to end it, but that's okay, whatever.
That was good.
Yeah, good enough. I can't do anything in under a minute. You know me. It took an hour to answer one question.
But you did well.
Thank you. Oh, I've got to send it off. Reminds me of when the head monk tells me he wants me to give a talk, or he used to at the Cambodian monastery, he would ask me to give a talk, and so I'd prepare something, maybe a half an hour, and then he'd, at the last minute, he'd tell me, okay, 5 minutes. There's no way I can condense that into 10 or 15 minutes. Hi, my name is Yutta Dhammo Bhikkhu, and what I'd like to talk about is the application of ancient spiritual teachings in the modern digital age. My life has been a series of contrasts. I'm ordained as a Buddhist monk, and I've taught and practiced meditation and Buddhism in the jungles of Asia. But at the same time, I've begun to use these teachings on the internet and through technologies like YouTube and Facebook.
These teachings.
So I'm interested to look at how these technologies can hinder and at the same time can help our spiritual practice. On the one hand, they encourage indulgence and
I'm going to do it again. Not satisfied. Sorry. I'm just wasting time, you know, because we've got until 10, so I figured I should torture you all. Do we have any questions yet?
No. I think people are visibly entertained.
Are they laughing at me? I bet they won't even choose me because I'm not your typical. It's a university thing, so it's for university students. It's probably not where I should be applying. No, I don't know. Whatever. And this camera's too far over. We're getting the edge there. Test. Okay, we're back on. Hi, my name is Yutta Dhammo Bhikkhu, and what I'm interested to talk about. Hi, my name is Yutta Dhammo Bhikkhu. And what I'm interested to talk about is the application of ancient spiritual teachings in the modern digital age. My life has been a series of contrasts. I am ordained as a Buddhist monk and have taught meditation in the jungles of Asia, but at the same time I've begun to use modern technology to bring these same teachings to the Western world and the modern world. So I'm interested in how these technologies can hinder, on the one hand, and potentially actually support our practice on the other. On the one hand, they can foster intoxication and indulgence and ego, and on the other hand, they can cultivate love and compassion and help us to come together and cultivate wisdom and enlightenment. So thank you for your consideration, and I hope you find this an interesting topic. 57 seconds. There you go.
That came out really good, didn't it?
Good. Done. The coloring is strange. I think I need a better color balance or something. White balance. There's this thing called white balance.
I'm hoping that it looked different on your camera because actually I'm in the Hangout. It looked really fuzzy.
Yeah, it's a different camera.
Yeah, I thought so because sometimes that happens with the Dhammapada videos and they come out really good once you post them.
It's funny, the camera is auto-focusing and it shouldn't. So it goes fuzzy every so often and it shouldn't be that. Gotta figure out, there should be a way to use a manual autofocus or something.
Yeah. A question, Bhante. What does Ajahn mean? Why are you a bhikkhu? Ajahn Tong is an Ajahn.
One hand is my teacher. Intoxication. Ajahn means teacher. So I call him Ajahn because he's my teacher. I also, actually, to his face, I don't usually call him Ajahn, I call him Lumpu.
Longpu, which means Luong means Luong actually. I think it might just refer to the color, but Luong. I guess not Luong. 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 Pa Luong. Luong, I think, means high. And Bu means grandfather.
Ah, I've heard that term used for Ajahn Chah.
Yeah, Longpu, Longpa. Longpa is his venerable father. So for elder monks, I usually say Longpa. But Longpu is his grandfather, so yeah. Informally, sometimes I'll call him Ajahn.
But Ajahn is teacher, so would you object if people called you Ajahn? Not that you would refer to yourself in that way.
I'm not Thai now, am I?
No.
They don't use the word Ajahn much in Pali. Not in that way. I guess in a student-teacher situation they often do. But why would you use a Thai word? I'm not Thai and you're not Thai.
No, but Oops.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I'm back.
It's okay. If it's going to upset you, we won't call you Ajahn.
No, it won't upset me.
No, I'm kidding.
I always found it kind of silly that all these Western monks call themselves Ajahn this and Ajahn that. First of all, you're not my Ajahn, so. And second of all, you're not Thai and I'm not Thai, so. I mean, the problem is it fosters this idea of Thai Buddhism, which unwittingly fosters this idea of Thai Buddhism, which is really ridiculous. There's no such thing as Thai Buddhism or Burmese Buddhism or Sri Lankan Buddhism, and there shouldn't be.
So what would be the appropriate English equivalent, though? I mean, you wouldn't call someone teacher, and their name, that wouldn't...
What do you call your teacher? How do you call your teacher?
Well, I've never had a religious teacher, just lay people that would be Mr. or Mrs. so-and-so.
Call me Mr. Sir.
Well, we do call you Venerable Sir.
Yeah. I have had some people call me Sir. I call a lot of people Sir. I call people Sir all the time. Ma'am. I call women ma'am, which then I wonder, sometimes they're younger than me and I don't think they like that. Don't think that's very polite, is it?
In other countries it seems really normal. Like when I've been to other places, people will call women ma'am or even madam.
Mm-hmm.
But in the United States, if a woman gets called ma'am, they get all upset.
They do, because it's old. Should be what, miss? Ms?
Really, anything like that is little controversial.
It is.
Name is
what?
Probably...
There's no equivalent to sir? Or should we just call them sir?
I mean, there's the whole miss or missus. You don't know if someone's married. Ms is kind of, I don't know. It's utilitarian, but it doesn't really flow too well in conversation. And man makes people think of a really older matronly person, so I don't know. There's no real good word in my culture anyway that I know of.
Well, your culture isn't very polite though, that's the problem.
Yeah, that's the problem. We just call people by their first name, and sometimes that's not considered respectful by older people or people from other countries, but that's considered the polite, friendly thing. Well, maybe not polite, but the friendly thing to call someone by their name. Can we call you Pra?
It's another Thai word.
What does that word mean, though?
You can call me Al. You can call me whatever you want. What does Pra mean? Pra comes from the Pali Wara. It means special or sacred or holy or something. Venerable, maybe. Enlightenment. Now on YouTube.
You were not always Bhikkhu Yuttadhammo. Is that 10 years a monk to get the title of Bhikkhu?
everybody always Bhikkhu. Thinks there's some kind of title to talk like about. When I change the color of my robe, or we don't have stuff like that. I was Yuttadhammo Bhikkhu from day one. Yeah, but how it changed is in Thailand, and even still, they call me Pra Noa. And even the Thai people here call me Pra Noa because they've stopped using the Pali words for the most part. When I went to Sri Lanka, they called me Yuttadhamma because that's how you call someone. If you talk to me, you can't say, "Hey, Yuttadhammo." That's ignorant. And shows that you don't know Pali or you're not interested in Pali, because Yuttadhammo is third person only. It's used to refer to someone like that Yuttadhammo guy. So anyway, when I was in Thailand, it was always Pra Noa. And for a while I switched to Brother Noa, because, you know, they talk, the monks are often... In English, it's often translated into brethren or something. So I thought, well, that's interesting. Just call, as a monk, monks are often called brother, right? Mm. So I thought, well, Brother Noah, because there's this song that my mother used to sing to me, Brother Noah, who built the ark? Noah, Brother Noah built the ark. So I thought it would be kind of cute for Westerners, familiar. So then I used Brother Noah Yuttadhammo for a while. And then the Sri Lankan, when I went to Sri Lanka, they were not very happy about that because brother is a Christian word for them anyway. Finally, I thought about it, and the best way to refer to yourself is with Bhikkhu on the end. Tanisaro gets that right, I think. That's how it is in the text. Yuttadhammasa Bhikkhu no Yuttadhammo Bhikkhu. Girimanandasa Bhikkhu no. You see it in the text like that.
I saw one of your videos that you made in Sri Lanka. It was like a Buddhist television station.
Hmm.
And I saw they had your name listed as Yuttadhamma. And I thought, oh, they spelled this name wrong.
Hmm.
Little did I know I was wrong.
It's nice to have your last name as Bhikkhu. Oh, there's only 4 student speakers, huh? I doubt I'll get it. I look too old, I think. Oh well.
I don't imagine they probably have someone in mind already for this.
Sorry?
I mean, it would be unlikely that they have someone in mind already for it.
No, but I mean, they're looking for students, so at 36, I'm hardly a university student. Well, I am.
Is there really a traditional student anymore, though?
I don't know. They all look a lot, most of them look a lot younger than me. Do we have a quote at least that we can look at? What's our quote today?
We do. Should probably take my party hat off first.
You have a party hat on?
I do, yes. It's New Year's Eve, so I'm using the special effects here. It doesn't show?
It does. Looks kind of silly.
Yeah, it does. Let me get rid of that. Except I'm not sure how to get rid of it. Okay, here we go. And the Lord said to Magadhyaya, "It is like a man born blind who cannot see either color or shape, the even or the uneven, the stars, the sun, or the moon. He might hear someone speaking of the pleasure of a lovely, unstained, pure white cloth and start searching for one, but someone might deceive him by giving him a greasy, grimy, coarse robe and say, 'My good man, this is lovely, unstained, pure white cloth.' The blind man might take it and put it on. Then his friends and relations might get a physician or surgeon to make medicine for him, potions, purgatives, ointments, and treatment for his eyes. Because of this, he might regain his sight and restore his vision. Then the desire and attachment he had for that greasy robe would go. He would no longer consider the man who gave it to him a friend. He might even consider him an enemy, thinking, 'For a long time I have been defrauded, deceived, and cheated by this man.' Even so, if I were to teach you Dhamma, saying, 'This is that health, this is that Nirvana,' you might come to know health, you might see Nirvana. With the arising of that vision, the desire and attachment you had for the five clinging aggregates might go. You might even think, 'For a long time I have been defrauded, deceived, and cheated by the mind, by clinging to body, feelings, perceptions, mental constructs, and consciousness. Conditioned by this clinging, there was becoming. Conditioned by becoming, there was birth. Conditioned by birth, old age, dying, grief, sorrow, suffering, lamentation, and despair came into being. This is the origin of this whole mass of suffering.' And Magadhyaya said to the Lord, 'I have confidence that if the good Gotama were to teach me Dhamma, I could rise from my seat, no longer blind.'"
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's quite powerful.
It's kind of a determination too. The last line, "If Gotama would teach me Dhamma, I could rise from my seat no longer blind."
Certainly high praise. That's, I mean, it's a good summary of how we look at the situation we're in. We always wonder what's wrong with pleasure, what's wrong with indulgence, what's wrong with clinging, what's wrong with wanting, what's wrong with trying to fix our body and our mind and make them satisfying. And so the Buddha's teaching on conditional arising. We're being defrauded, we're being deceived, we're deceiving ourselves. We've come to delude ourselves about the nature of our existence. The nature of experience and the nature of those things that we strive for and cling to. And when the Buddha teaches, when we practice the Buddha's teaching, what happens is we come to see, and we see things that were surprisingly never clear to us before. It's quite shocking to be have these things revealed and to realize you've been wearing dirty robes, thinking they were clean. You've been chasing after refuse, thinking it was gold.
That's another question, Bhante. This may be a weird question. I was wondering if you could elaborate on the Buddhist terrorist Ashin Uratu. It is very confusing to me why people would follow the teachings if he's trying to kill the Muslims out of Myanmar. Not too biased to all the Buddhist lay people and monks, just curious on the matter. What do you think?
Yeah, well, Buddha was clear, if people are torturing you and you get angry at them for that, you're not a follower of the Buddha. You're not following his teachings. You're not that you're not a follower, but you're not following his teachings. I mean, there's no certainty in the world. People try to find certainty. They try to cling to their country, cling to their territory, you know, cling to their culture. And I mean, it's reasonable that they do that because they're afraid. But it should be a lesson for all of us that there's no certainty that we'll be able to practice Buddhism, that Buddhism will continue, that we won't be forced to practice other teachings. You know, what if some religious group takes over the world someday? We might be forbidden to practice. We might be placed in a situation where we have to die for our beliefs. So it's really a tragic situation, but it's a part of life. And for these people to cultivate anger and encourage anger and incite people to anger is really unfortunate. Certainly not the Buddhist teaching, but you see the same thing in Sri Lanka. We saw the same thing. Buddhist monks were supporting the Sri Lankan military. The Sri Lankan military's attack on the Tamil Tigers. So they were blessing the president and the army to go in and end the war forcibly by killing people. As I said, I think it's understandable. They're reasonably so, they're attached to their country, attached to their culture. It's not Buddhist. It's not in line with the Buddhist teaching. It degrades Buddhism. It sullies the teachings, and what are you? In the end, all you're protecting is the husk, because you yourself are a hypocrite. You're not actually keeping or practicing the teachings.
Do people actually think of him as a Buddhist? I'm not familiar with this person, but do people actually think of him as a Buddhist, even though he's
a Buddhist monk?
In favor of killing people?
I mean, I don't know the details, but I've heard rumors.
Will all beings eventually become enlightened? Are there many monks who have lost their ability to meditate due to aging and memory loss? Or is this inaccurate to describe?
I don't think it's fair to say that all beings will eventually become enlightened. Um, monks have lost their ability to meditate. I don't, I mean, it depends on their attainment, you know. Certainly if it's just mundane attainment, then they can fall away from it. But like an arahant, we met this Burmese monk. My way to India for the first time, we stopped in Bangkok and went to see one of the high up insight meditation teachers in Thailand. He's Burmese, but he had been sent to Thailand, I think, by the Mahasi Sayadaw many years ago. And he started probably the first true Mahasi center in Thailand. So we went to see him when he was sick. And he didn't talk. No one could really understand what he would say. He would mumble things. When we came in, they said, you know, he doesn't talk, but you're welcome to pay respect. And so we paid respect, and then he spoke Thai. He understood Thai, used to. So we said something to him in Thai, and I think his attendant said something maybe in Burmese to him, and normally he would just stare off into space, and then he turned to look at us, and he looked at me, being the Western monk, and he smiled, this big smile, and said something that no one understood. And when we all kind of looked puzzled, he just turned back and stared off into space again, and that was it. So I think you could argue that they become less functional, but I mean, I don't know this monk, but he seemed fairly spiritually accomplished, even with brain degradation, it seemed like.
But the meditation and the attainments that you have in one life will benefit you in other lives?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they already have left their mark. They change your course. Everything you do affects your course.
Bhante, did Sangha ever intervene directly or punish someone? I heard that and I didn't know what to think. It was almost as though the Buddha would call upon Sangha, as I heard it. Thank you.
No, the Buddha would never. Not that I can think of. But the Bodhisattva was involved often with Sangha. Usually not calling upon him. Usually it was the Bodhisattva would do something so awesome that Sakka would come down and test him or talk to him about it, get interested in him because of it. But yeah, Sakka seems to have had some power to affect people's lives. I mean, a lot of it's legend. We don't know whether it's actually true, whether it actually happened like that. There's a lot of exaggeration, I think.
Lots of people having fireworks around the world as it turns to a new year. Do they have fireworks in Canada, Bhante? For New Year's?
Not for New Year's that I know of. Maybe.
Yeah. That's not really traditional in my area either, fireworks, but in other countries. It's a big thing.
Yeah, I saw there was a fire or something.
A fire from fireworks?
I don't know. Something about a fire and fireworks. In Dubai. All right, I'm gonna go. At 10 o'clock, we'll start. No, anyone who wants to start at 10, we'll begin
Yes.
meditating. I'm gonna take a bit here to upload my video, and then I'll start. And at 12 o'clock, we'll just come and we can just text each other. But this is it for video. If you don't stay up, Happy New Year, everyone. Whatever that really means, not much. But see you all in the new year. Good night. Thanks, Robin.
Thank you, Bhante.